702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
Abdirahim Saeed is my guest, BBC journalist at BBC Monitoring. They are tracking all of these organizations. And we are going to be focusing on what is happening in Mozambique, the whole Cabo Delgado story. And he joins me now on the line. Abdirahim, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time, sir.
Hello, and thank you for having me on the air. And hi, all the way from London.
You have this program on BBC Africa. Just explain to me how it works before we get into the conversation about what's happening just a few kilometers from us here, a few hundred kilometers from us here in South Africa, in Mozambique. What is BBC Africa Eye all about? How does it work? What's the mandate?
Well, we launched back in 2018, and BBC Africa is a TV and an online award-winning investigation series that is broadcast in English, in French, in Hausa, and Swahili. And what we do at the program, which is basically a documentary on various subjects, and in the latest documentary, we talk about the fighting or the insurgency movement in Mozambique, where in this program and other documentaries, we use pioneering techniques of digital investigation, and we combine that with reporting on the ground and eyewitness accounts. And the remit of the program or the documentary is to basically uncover hidden local stories across Africa.
Yeah,
we had different various subjects, and also hold local politicians and the powerful decision makers to account.
Yeah.
So in essence, it's a piece of investigation you can watch online and also on TV, and we tackle various subjects of interest and that are often don't get the spotlight.
You've been tracking and telling the story of your exploits as you tracked groups such as ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Shabaab, I imagine Boko Haram also. I mean, if you're speaking about Hausa and the languages spoken in West Africa, I would imagine that part of the interest would be organizations such as Boko Haram. What is the collective name that you use for these organizations?
Yes, it is a bit complicated. So as part of my job at the BBC, so I work for a department called BBC Monitoring.
Yeah.
My job is to track and analyze the propaganda and the activities of extremist jihadist groups around the world. We mainly focus on two main groups. One is called Al-Qaeda, and the other one's called IS for short, and sometimes known as ISIS. Both names stand for the Islamic State group. That's what they call themselves.
Mm.
So these are two extremist jihadist groups who also happen to be sworn enemies of each other. So not only are they fighting around the world, fighting local governments and militaries, but they also, have locked horns and fought each other in various places, including on the continent as well. So those are the two major groups. In addition, you've got some other groups, smaller ones, and you've mentioned Boko Haram, who are present mainly in Nigeria, but operate also in neighboring countries. And Boko Haram, at one point, they pledged allegiance to IS or ISIS, as we know it as well. And for those who are not familiar with the history of ISIS, this group kind of started in the Middle East originally. Its base, its heartland, was in Iraq and Syria. And what happened was in 2019, after 4 or 5 years of holding ground, they were basically kicked out by the US-led coalition there. And the group made, it kind of pivoted its attention and activities to the continent, to African countries, including Nigeria, and more lately, countries like Mozambique and also the Democratic Republic of Congo.
I want to get to the issue of what's happening in Mozambique, but I am interested in your interest in these organizations. Some may argue that Abdirahim and his team are a BBC organization. They are financed, resourced by a particular understanding of the world, and that that understanding would, amongst other things, be one that that would be understood to be Islamophobic. How would you respond to that?
What I can say is, in terms of what we do on a day-to-day basis, is informed by the mission of the organization as the BBC. So we are an impartial organization, and our job is basically news gathering. Mm. And we investigate stories and we tell it as it is. People can always make their own minds. They can make up their own minds in terms of our coverage. Yeah. But I'm glad to say BBC News and BBC programs are watched around the world. You know, we've got some, like I mentioned, with BBC Africa. They did this fantastic investigation on the insurgency in Mozambique. It's an award-winning program. And, you know, our work speaks for ourselves. But at the end of the day, you know, we focus on what we do and we let the judgment for our viewers and listeners.
All of these organizations, IS, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, seem also to be highly resourced organizations. And some argue, as you say, that they are very extremist. But as I asked earlier on, that they use, I suppose, Islamic texts to give life to their ideologies. To what extent are they true to Islamic text, to the spirit of Islam? To what extent do we, who are perhaps not Muslim, separate them from, I don't know, mainstream Islamic faith? How do we curate? How do we get to a point where we understand that they may be using Islamic text in the way that they push their propaganda, but maybe not truly representing the spirit and the letter of Islam, if that is the case?
I mean, that's a good point, because in terms of our investigation, the latest one on Mozambique and the insurgency there, and it's worth noting that in Cabo Delgado, the most northern part of the country, is majority Muslim, although the rest of the country is majority Christian. And in the eyewitnesses that are featured in the program, you know, a lot of them are Muslim. And when we talk to them, they do tell us, you know, they have one local imam or sheikh, and this program, if you get the chance to watch it, talks about how 2 years insurgency started in 2017. This group that has now been linked to ISIS or IS and is known locally as Al-Shabaab.
Yeah.
And not to be confused with the Shabaab of East Africa.
Yes.
Local Muslims, and including this sheikh, tell us that such groups, you know, do not represent Islam, mainstream Islam, moderate Islam, and they have flagged them up to authorities. And they said they were recruiting youngsters in Cabo Delgado, and they were telling them not to go to schools. They were pulling them out of schools, and they were basically recruiting them. So as a journalist, when I speak to Muslims and when we feature Muslims in our programs around the world, mainstream Muslims often do tell us these groups, they cloak themselves in the language of Islam and use and holy text to propagate their agendas. And that is, to be honest, that is the best judgment you can have on that, by actually, you know, watching and listening to the people that we speak to on the ground, not just in Mozambique, but it's something that we've seen before also from other eyewitness accounts in Syria and Iraq. These groups often come with very harsh and extreme interpretations of their understanding of Islamic laws, and they, you know, give locals no choice, and they exploit political, social, and economic factors that are happening on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's instability, whether it's poverty, whether it's deprivations. These groups usually are strongest in those kind of areas where they can exploit what's happening on the ground.
It's easy to look at these organizations in isolation and say that they exploit those socioeconomic realities. I totally get that argument. But these conflicts throughout the world don't happen in isolation, I would imagine, Abdirahim. They happen in a historical context. They happen in a context where resources have been abused by governments, by multinationals, where the people of those countries ultimately don't enjoy the wealth of their countries. What is the interpretation from your point of view of that context, of that reality, a reality that says, sure, it's easy to simply say that these people are crazy, they are extremist and so forth, but part of the reason why they proliferate, part of the reason why they exist, part of the reason why they get membership and resources is because something else is going on there. How do you explain that?
I think this makes my point in the sense that the insurgency in Mozambique and perhaps similar insurgencies in other countries, you're right, don't happen in a vacuum. And often there's not one single reason. It's usually a combination of reasons.
Yeah.
So it could be in the case of Mozambique, yes, the militants that we investigate are local people. And that's what eyewitnesses told us. The videos that we investigate where these men are featured, who are known locally as Al-Shabaab, don't talk about the deprivation. They don't talk about economic reasons. They adopt a very radical Islamist ideology, and they want to implement harsh interpretations of Islamic laws. So yes, that is a factor. Radical Muslims, extremist ideology, that is a factor. But you're right too. And economics and social factors also plays part. And that does not feature in the demands of these militants. But, you know, observers, at least one respected observer that we analysts, local analysts that we feature, he says it's very simplistic to only talk about the links to ISIS. He says these are local people. And what other observers and analysts are saying, these people are seeing that the localities, their local societies are deprived, when at the same time in Cabo Delgado, for example, they discovered natural gas, for example, as far back as 2010. Also in 2009, minerals like rubies were discovered, and they've seen all these riches. And what commentators and analysts are saying, and a lot of them are local, are saying these young people are seeing these riches, but they're not seeing the end result in jobs, in education, in the economical situation improving. And for example, there is a BBC article I was reading earlier where an expert on Mozambican affairs talks about how the gas that's been discovered in the $20 million project,
yeah,
that's existing in Cabo Delgado, the majority of people employed on such projects are actually, not from Cabo Delgado. And any Mozambicans who are employed are not from that locality, from other parts of Mozambique. So you have these economic factors analysts and observers also talk about.
Yeah.
So in summary, yes, it's a combination of reasons that also includes economic and social factors.
Yeah. Let's talk about Cabo Delgado, and just the issues that are germane to that particular situation. I think what I now understand is the context in which you guys do these investigations. Let's talk a little bit more now about Cabo Delgado. Yes, semi-precious stones have been found there. Gas has been found there. I believe Total is the company, the French company that is involved in the process of getting the gas there. There's a government there that has been, you know, successful in getting the rest of the African continent and perhaps aid from international players to assist in dealing with the insurrection there. What have you found are the reasons why this insurrection, with little or no resources, has been so successful from the point of view of the local Al-Shabaab? Why? What has happened, and why has it been so successful relative to their aims?
Well, two things from the start that we wanted to find out was where, you know, who is fighting in Cabo Delgado, number one, and what do they want? And it's always been reported that it's a local group known locally as Al-Shabaab. And it's worth mentioning again that this is not the same group that exists in Somalia, in East Africa. They just happen to share a name. And this local group that's known as Al-Shabaab, in English, you can translate it as the youth. What we found out was one of the leaders, by speaking to eyewitness accounts, they said he is a local man. They named him as Nuro, who grew up in the area, and he ran businesses. He went to the local school. And the other thing that we found was the structure of the group is not... set in stone. Is actually quite vague, and it's more of a collective leadership, because eyewitnesses also identified at least one other leading figure within the group. So this is the group. It's known as Al-Shabaab. In the documentary, if you get the chance to watch it, also you will hear more about these two leaders, especially Nuro. And the documentary is available on YouTube. If you just search for Africa Eye,
yes,
of Musumba, you'll find it there. And the other thing we wanted to find out was, why are they fighting? What is the issue? And we discussed what I talked about earlier, the combination of their interpretation of Islam, their harsh radical ideology and interpretation of the religion, but also we talked about the links with ISIS. Those links are disputed. Some people talk about, and yes, there may be some propaganda for propaganda reasons, a link, but there's no, it's not like ISIS is controlling the situation on the ground.
Yeah.
It's more like it's being driven by local people for local reasons. And the reasons we've already touched on, and although these militants don't talk about it in those terms, but many analysts and observers talk about, it's not just, radical ideologies, but it's also about the economics, corruption, about human rights violations. Is all a combination of reasons and grievances that exist in Cabo Delgado.
Yes, yes. And would you say that is why they are able to, I'm afraid to say support, to get support, but my sense is that, we've been talking about the Cabo Delgado thing now for about 2 years now. It started out, as you say, grievances that have grown. And some people have said the fact that we don't have opportunities for young people there, the fact that we have a situation where the dominant faith there is Islam, the fact that that it's mostly a young population, seems to have given impetus to their work, right? With all of the power, I mean, I'm talking here about organizations like Total, friends of the government of that country, which many people have blamed for not being decisive in how they wanted to see and get assistance with regards to this insurgency, with the fact that there's so many people that have been displaced, young women that have been violated, and you know the story. How come it has been so difficult to bring an end to Al-Shabaab's operations in Cabo Delgado?
I think it's worth recapping, at least now, after a year of these militants holding on to Musumba Dibrai, for example, in Cabo Delgado. They've been kicked out. So, international local forces, regional forces, that includes, South Africa and a few other neighboring countries, Southern African countries, have pushed out these militants from their base in Musumba Dibrai, for example, they've been holding onto for the last year. So they are not invincible. They have been kicked out. But the question is that enough?
Yeah.
And the answer is, we can't say for certain yes or no, but what we can say from experience and history, such groups are not defeated by military solutions. We know that from experience. So Boko Haram is still going on in Nigeria, even more than after 10 years of existence in the country. The government always talks about military successes in northern, eastern Nigeria, in where Boko Haram operates, but the group is still there.
Yeah.
Similar thing with the Taliban in Afghanistan. The US, the UK, other European countries, the NATO have spent 20 years and billions of dollars of trying to defeat the Taliban. But look at it now, 20 years afterwards. The Taliban are back, and not just back, but they are in power and they have a de facto government. So yes, these groups can be defeated, but what we need to remember from experience, sometimes military solutions are not enough. That's what many observers and analysts are also telling us. And they're saying often these groups are hard to defeat because, they are well motivated. They haven't got anything to lose. They've lost everything, and they've got bigger groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda joining the fight, at least in propaganda terms, and encouraging these lot and propagating on their behalf and exploiting the situation on the ground. So that's another reason sometimes why it's hard and to defeat. And, the bigger reason is, have we also dealt with all those, grievances about, about the economy, about jobs, about education? Because often, if you're not dealing with those, many experts on these insurgencies say they will often come back, and they'll give you the examples we've just discussed from Nigeria and Afghanistan.
Yeah. You've obviously done the investigative work to see how these groups operate, particularly in Cabo Delgado. What is the hallmark of their infiltration into areas such as Cabo Delgado? How do they start the conversation with the people in those areas? Who is sent? Is there somebody? I remember there was a letter that our government, the South African government, received from ISIS that said, stay out of this conflict if you know what's good for you. obviously, we're involved there. But what is the modus operandi? Who do they go and speak to? How do they recruit? What is the process that they follow?
I mean, Al-Shabaab in Mozambique have actually been, shy in terms of being upfront about their activities and, being in touch with the media. They've always been a shadowy group. And it's only more recently in the last year they have started appearing more in videos. So not a lot is known about how they operate and who's who. And that's partly why we started this investigation, to find out a little bit more about the people involved, the recruitment, and you know, how did this group operate. Having said that, in our investigation for BBC Africa Eye, we, like I said, we do learn about the names of some of the local leaders who happen to be Mozambican. We didn't manage to, you know, we spoke to eyewitnesses who talked about the group being brutal in their dealings with the locals. I mean, they held on to Musimba the Prior for a year. They recruited young men within that port town into their group. You know, they held women as slaves.
Yeah.
And they were quite brutal, even in the way they killed people. So we've seen videos that they have shot themselves and have released online, but also part of ISIS's propaganda on behalf of this group have also released photos and videos that they were too graphic actually to air in our own documentary for BBC Eye Africa. Mm. But as an investigative journalist for the BBC, I mean, I did watch it in the background. Everything and anything from beheadings to mutations, cutting people's limbs. They employ all these tactics, you know, to scare locals and to demand their obedience. In terms of ISIS's propaganda and letters to local governments, including the South African government, I'm personally not aware of that. I mean, I do follow closely their official propaganda online. They released them on one particular messaging app that now they use. Previously, they used to be operating in other social media websites. They were kicked out of that. But in terms of what I see, in terms of the official propaganda, I haven't come across such a letter. But in the general rhetoric, for example, in their weekly, so-called newspaper, they do mock, they do send messages to African governments. They did comment recently on the last summer, this summer gone, there was a big conference by world powers, including many African countries attended, and they looked into defeating IS in Africa, especially in Western Africa, the Sahel region. Mozambique came up as well. So IS did comment on that. You know, they mocked this conference openly. They talked about how weak these governments are and how they will defeat them. Obviously, this is all propaganda and rhetoric, and this is what we see. And this is how Al-Shabaab operates on the ground, and this is how IS, whom they have been linked to, talks about what's happening in Africa. This is the rhetoric they use.
There is suggestions. There are suggestions suggesting that. So, for a country like South Africa, that we already have cells operating in South Africa that are connected to what's going on in Cabo Delgado. That, in fact, I think there are two brothers that were arrested a couple of years ago. Connected to this whole narrative that there are cells operating in South Africa, and I'm not sure how much you understand of the geography of this part of the world, that we're very close to Mozambique. I mean, it's literally half a day's drive, right? It's not that far. We've got pretty good roads leading to Mozambique, and South Africa is considered to be, I suppose, a place where people can get involved in illicit activities that would be able to finance some of the activities of organizations such as Al-Shabaab of Mozambique and all of the other organizations that you've already been tracking. To what extent are you aware of that kind of activity here in South Africa?
In terms of the propaganda that we follow, track and analyze, if we're talking, for example, about IS, Islamic State Group, they have not previously talked about connections to South Africa. And even if they're aware, they don't usually openly talk about it for their own, you know, security reasons, quote unquote out. Having said that, the fear is, yes, given how close the two countries are and how porous the borders are, many analysts and observers do fear that what's happening in Mozambique could overflow into South Africa. And we do know the South African government kind of pushed for this intervention in Mozambique, at least on the basis of containing the problem within the borders of Mozambique. So yes, in theory, yes, there could be connections, there could be movements between the two countries. But in terms of what I've seen so far, I haven't seen anything solid to suggest that exists at the moment. And if it does happen, yes, it will be a coup for ISIS. It will be a coup for Al-Shabaab in Mozambique, because at least ISIS does see itself as a borderless organization, and they want the, you know, radical ideology to be across the continent. And like I said, they've been on the back foot, at least in the Middle East. They were kicked out after 4 or 5 years of having a base, a so-called caliphate, a so-called Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And they kind of pivoted to Africa, to the continent, to Nigeria, to Mozambique. So they do, in theory, they do want to have some kind of presence in South Africa. But so far, I haven't seen any solid evidence to suggest ISIS has cells there or is directing people there.
Somebody just gave me the name of the Tulsi twins. Those are the brothers that I'm referring to that were arrested, and I'm told that they've been locked up for 5 years with no access to justice. I wonder whether there is a connection there, and why this story persists without actually coming out with some clarity as to what exactly these young men have done and why it is that they are not receiving the level of justice. I mean, do you have any line of sight as to why that might be the case?
I can't really say more than what I've said on those particular two cases. In terms of their connections with the two big groups like Al-Qaeda or ISIS, those groups have not really talked about their activities in South Africa. They did talk about, their interest in general in Africa, you know, other than ISIS. You've got Al-Qaeda, which has a big presence in Sahel countries, in Mali in particular, where the French had troops until recently. They declared they were pulling out troops. So Africa, in certain parts of the continent, there is a strong presence of extremist jihadist groups. And gladly, until now anyway, there is no solid mention of South Africa in these groups' propaganda. But that doesn't mean they wouldn't like to have some kind of links or presence in South Africa. Mm.
The government of Mozambique has been criticized for not acting with much speed and could have avoided many of the casualties that we hear about in Cabo Delgado. Some have argued that it's because many of the officials are in the pockets of the companies that are benefiting from the resources of that country. To your view, from your point of view, what do you make of the way that the government of Mozambique has handled this matter? and the subsequent entry of regional powers like South Africa and others, and then, of course, other countries outside of the continent. What do you make of the performance of the government of Mozambique in this particular instance?
Well, I refer back to the locals that we feature in our documentary, BBCI Africa, The Sons of Musambwa, if you can search for the documentary online on YouTube, who told us that, you know, the government from their point of view was slow to react to the insurgency. You know, for example, they say, you know, they warned local government about, you know, radical preachers, you know, preaching to youngsters, pulling them out from school, preaching in mosques, and, you know, handing out pamphlets and propaganda. So they say we've been warning the government, not just in 2017 when the insurgency started, but even before that, 2 years earlier before that. And also, if we look at the numbers in terms of the attacks over the years, there is an argument to say that, yes, the government either ignored the problem or didn't take it seriously because, for example, in 2018, according to one tracking organization called the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, this organization collects numbers of reported attacks based on local media reports. And they say, for example, in 2018, there were 81 attacks. In 2019, there were 176 attacks.
Yeah.
And then last year in 2020, this increased massively to 414 attacks. So that's more than one attack per day. And these were all indications that the problem of insurgency was getting worse. And the government, the argument says the government didn't, you know, was late, you know, to take action, and only took action more recently when the problem happened in Cabo Delgado became international news. It hit international headlines because if you remember in March this year in Palma, in another port town, you know, the militants attacked a hotel. They took over the town. You know, there were even South Africans, or at least one South African was affected.
Yeah.
You know, so when that hit the headline, I think at that point, then the government said, actually, yes, we do need help. So many people, many observers, many locals that we spoke to say, yes, the government could have acted much sooner.
I'm going to say something that constantly infuriates me about African governments, that while their own people suffer, while Africans are at the receiving end of brutality from whomever, governments are very, very quiet. Until somebody from South Africa, or perhaps with a lighter skin, or somebody from the global north finds themselves in trouble, only then do our governments begin to move. It's something that I've noticed all over the African continent. Noticed it here in South Africa as well. And it brings me to the question that says, to what extent are we talking about the role of organizations such as Total and many other multinationals that are involved in Cabo Delgado in some of this tension and conflict? And to what extent is this a continuation of the fight against colonialism?
I mean, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the economic situation of what's happening in Cabo Delgado, to many people, many locals, many observers, plays a big part. So when these big energy companies come to get the gas out and then to sell it on the world markets, you know, locals, they didn't, you know, from at least from the people that we We speak to the observers, the analysts we speak to, they haven't got a problem with these big companies coming over and helping them to get the gas out. You know, they got the expertise, the know-how, the resources. But what many people do talk about and they have a problem with is like when these companies come and from their point of view, the wealth and the riches are not shared out equally. Mm-hmm. So yes, from that perspective, I guess some people do compare it. They do see parallels with previous colonial powers. You know, yeah. Mozambique itself was colonized by the Portuguese. So for them, it's like now we're a sovereign country. If we're going to have all these riches, we need to share it out equally. And what we're hearing is, not just in our documentary, but from other people too, is part of the problem is whether it's the fault of the government or these big companies like Total, is that they're not making sure that wealth is shared equally. Mm. And that creates problems on the ground. It drives people to extremism. And then you have big organizations, militant organizations, extremist organizations like IS and Al-Qaeda coming and exploiting that.
Yeah. It's a big story. As things stand at the moment, what is happening? I mean, where are we in that conflict? Are we likely to see the withdrawal of regional troops? And because I've just heard that there's going to be an extension of the stay, at least for the South African contingent of those troops. Where are we as far as what's going on in Cabo Delgado is concerned?
I mean, like you said, I mean, the mission of the regional forces that intervened, the forces of the Southern African Development Community, their remit has been extended. So this happened on Tuesday. They came in June. They were supposed to finish in October, middle of this month, but it's been extended. In terms of the future, at least the near future, yes, the president of Mozambique talked about they have achieved their immediate goal of driving out the militants from Mocimboa de Praia after it was occupied by the militants for a year. But even himself, he said, the war is not over yet. Mm. He called on the insurgents to surrender. And he says, the war still, it hasn't hit all its targets. Also, the UN itself said similar things. They warned that the fighting hasn't stopped. And we go back to the, to the factors that are driving the insurgency. Yeah. So now we have the military solution.
Yeah.
And what many observers are saying, military solutions are not enough. In the long term, sure. If you want to solve the problem,
it's got to be economical.
With the social and economic factors too.
Abdirahim, I want to thank you very much, sir, for your time. How do our listeners get to view some of the content that you guys have created, particularly as it pertains to Cabo Delgado?
Yes, please do search for the social media handles of BBC News Africa on Facebook and BBC Africa on Twitter, and also search for us on YouTube. And if you're looking for the documentary, you can search for BBC Africa Eye and just put Sons of Mocimboa de Praia or Mozambique. Our documentary will come up. Please do watch it. Please do let us know what you think.
Yeah.
And these investigations really rely are part collaboration with our audiences. If you see a story that you think is worth investigating, please do get in touch with us too.
Abdirahim Saeed, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.